fourth Tower of Inverness, week 9, Monday.
High upon a mountain, above the pines and mist that surrounds the Bay of Inverness, there stands an incredible mansion. Its three towers appear to pierce the sky. Its windows are like 1,000 eyes turned inward. And its doors, hinged on time, open into endless space.
Fourth Tower of Inverness!
And now we return to the thrilling adventure serial, The Fourth Tower of Inverness. As you may well know, Jack has once again entered the mysterious Fourth Tower in search of the source of the music he has heard while on the physical plane of Inverness. Now he has entered a strange, exotic land. A silent old ferryman has brought him across a swift-flowing river, into a narrow channel that led through the jungle-like vegetation, and finally to a small lake. It is here that he saw the most beautiful of women. Even his furthest out dreams could not match the beauty of this exquisite goddess-like creature. Once again, his heart seemed to have opened for but a moment, and then she was gone.
I've never seen anyone so beautiful. I wonder if she could have been a goddess. And the Wurlitzer, that must have been the jukebox. Wow. Incredible.
Jack turns to the old ferryman.
Can you tell me... Where is he? He's gone. But how could he? What's this? He's left behind a sword and a scabbard. Well, it may come in handy.
Now taking the pole left by the ferryman, Jack moves the raft out to the spot where he saw the boat made of sandal with the oars of silver.
I wonder if she just vanished, or maybe my mind retained her image for so long that I stared upon a mirage long after she had gone. Wait a minute.
He notices a path through the lily pads, as though a small boat had glided through, gently pushing them aside. Now they slowly move back again, obscuring the narrow path.
She must have gone this way. Well, I'll have to hurry. The path will be completely closed in just a few moments.
He pulls the raft into the closing channel.
Darn. Now, how do you get this thing to go in a straight line? Come on, lily pads, make way. I'm coming through.
Finally, getting the knack of his vessel, he proceeds ahead rapidly.
Darn, they're closing up too fast. I don't know if I could... Just a second. Hey, it seems to lead into a channel up ahead. Yes, that must be where she's gone to.
The channel Jack heads into leads straight at first, but then curves and twists and becomes narrower as the trees grow thicker and thicker and taller till they shut out the light of the sun. And ahead, there is only darkness, like that of the mouth of death.
You know, maybe I missed a turn back there. Well, if this channel gets any narrower, the sides of the raft are going to start digging into the banks.
Then suddenly, out of the darkness, another face peers into his own and sticks out at him a long red tongue. Jack starts back and looks and sees before him a root-eating Weirogi clad in a coat of bark with long hair and nails like the claws of a bird. His legs and arms are bare, and his skin looks like the skin of an elephant's foot.
My son, why are you pulling a raft through a wood full of nothing but trees and rakshasas?
Ogres, vampires, goblins, and the like are all but variations of the Hindu rakshasas. Its special feature this week is its power to change its shape at will.
Well, my name is Jack Flanders, and I come from a world beyond. And I look for a goddess-like creature in a boat with silver oars and a magnificent jukebox glowing in the bow.
Ah, yes. I know of whom you speak. There are very few that wish to find that land of the lotus jukebox from whence she comes. And fewer still who find it. Fewest of those that haven't found it return.
Then you know where that land lies.
Ha ha! You're more ready to ask than to answer questions. Fat chance. I give nothing for nothing.
What can I possibly give that old geezer?
No. That I also have all my life been looking, not for one way only, but for three. And now, if you will, tell me my three ways, I will tell you yours.
One way for three? Well, what kind of a deal is that? Ah, well, there isn't much I can lose, I guess.
Tell me the first way. I will tell thee a third of thine way to the land, the lotus joke box.
Okay.
True or false? Sin against God is one thing. Sin against man is worse.
Sin against man is worse. True, true.
Good. I always wondered about that one. Next. Knowledge is better than...
Hold on, hold on. You're supposed to tell me my one third, remember?
Ah, yes. Now learn from me a portion of thine own way.
The way Rogi lays down on the ground and suddenly abandons the form of a hermit, becomes a weasel which sticks out a long red tongue and enters the ground by a hole and disappears. As Jack stoops down to examine the hole, he sees the way Rogi again beside him in his old shape, except that he continues to stick out the weasel's tongue.
Hey, what's the idea?
I have shown thee a way for a way.
This is no hermit, but one of those vile Rakshasas, or however you pronounce it.
Next, true or false, knowledge is better than wealth. You have to look after wealth. Knowledge looks after you.
Well, that's an easy one. True.
Excellent. Excellent. Now learn from me another portion of thine own way.
And as Jack watches the deceitful way Rogi become a bat and stick his tongue out at him again and flies away through the trees.
Wow. He's really good at what he does. But he's going to tell me my way, one way or another.
And suddenly, again he sees the way Rogi is standing at his side, and as before, sticks his tongue out at him.
Now answer one more, and thine own way will be clear before thee.
Okay.
True or false, a path and a gateway have no meaning or use once the objective is in sight.
Path and a... True.
Fantastic. Now that shall have emancipation from thine own stupidity as to the land of the lotus joke box.
Well, it's about time.
This is my answer.
And once again the way Rogi sticks out his tongue. But Jack has had about enough of this and swings the heavy pole from his raft, giving the way Rogi a smart clout atop the head. So sudden and sharp is the blow that the way Rogi's razor teeth snips off the very tip of his tongue.
Woe to thee, unlucky Zack. Thou art not in the land of the lotus box, but of Rakshasas, of who I am the king.
Nuts.
As you all must know by now, Jack Flanders has once again entered the mysterious Fourth Tower. This time he found himself in a really strange land. First he was ferried across a swift river. Then he saw a breathtaking, beautiful goddess-like creature in a boat made of sandal with silver oars floating in a pool of white lotus blossoms. And in the bow glowed a fantastic old jukebox that radiated the colors of the rainbow and illuminated the whole countryside. Then she was gone. Jack attempted to follow, pulling his raft into a channel that became narrower and narrower as he moved deeper and deeper into a dark woods. He came upon a root-eating Werujai, who, instead of helping him, offered him riddles and kept sticking out his tongue, giving him the raspberry or Bronx cheer, until Jack became so angry, he gave the Werujai a sound whack atop the head.
Ow!
The blow was so quick and sudden that the Werujai's sharp razor teeth snipped off the end of his tongue, and he was, needless to say, furious. But worse, the Werujai was really a Rakshasa, the king demon, in fact.
Well, it sure looks like troubled times ahead, but I'm glad I gave the old geezer a good whack. He had it coming.
And so Jack pushes his raft forward, deeper into the woods. Darkness has fallen as he continues along a silver path among trees that resemble Rakshasas, for they let in through the hair of their branches the light of the moon, which reflect the waters of the ever-narrowing channel. And finally...
Oh, shoot! The channel's gotten too narrow for the raft. I'll have to hoof it from here.
And so he starts off on foot. And as he goes, the trees gradually grow thinner, and at length he looks before him and sees in a clear space a dark blue forest, studded with moon lotuses, and all about it fireflies are flitting, looking like swarms of bees that have returned with torches, unable to endure separation at night from the lotus flowers they love all day. And as he gazes into the water, he sees in its smooth mirror the image of a woman dancing. And as she dances, her robes flutter in the wind, and drops of water sparkle in the moonlight like gems on her breasts, which rise and fall like a wave on the sea, in and out of the shadow of her hair, which resembles the essence of the blackness of night. And she chants as she dances, with a voice that sounds like a spell and fans the ear like a breeze from the mountains. Then he raises his eyes and sees the original of that water-painted woman image dancing on the other side of the pool. She looks across and sees him. Their eyes meet, traveling over the pool. And instantly, she stops her singing and dancing and claps her hands and calls to him.
Come over to me, handsome stranger, for I am weary of dancing alone, and I have a question to ask you.
And she leans against a tree and stands waiting, with one hand on the trunk of the tree and the other on her hip. Her breasts rise and fall with her breath, and she looks like a feminine incarnation of the essence of the agitation of the ocean. Stirred by the sight of the moon, Jack looks at her and says to himself,
"Holy smokes."
And he goes round the edge of the pool and finds her on the other side. She beckons to him with a bangled hand and moving lips and eyes that shine in the moonlight like the eyes of a snake. And she comes and stands before him and puts her hand on his shoulders with a touch like a leaf and looks up into his face with a smile and says,
"I am Ulupi. Adaija's daughter.
A kind of demon.
And here I live, all alone, with none with whom to compare myself, save my own image in the water. Tell me, for you have seen other women, have you ever met with eyes more beautiful than mine?"
And as he looks down into them as into two dark pools, he feels them pounding his heart like a pair of fists, and he says to himself,
"Holy smokes. Your eyes are very beautiful. But the night heavens have many eyes, all of great beauty."
Oh.
And a cloud comes over her face, and she flings away from him in disdain and stands pouting like a child.
I guess that wasn't the best thing to say.
And suddenly she turns again and puts up to her head the graceful creepers of her arms and unfastens the knot of her hair and shakes it. It falls like midnight about those stars, her eyes, and covers her all over like a veil, and rolls down round her feet and along the ground like a black serpent. Then, with her hand, she puts it away from her face and shoots through its meshes a subtle smile.
At least, you have never seen the equal to my hair.
And he feels her glance strike him like a thunderbolt out of a cloud.
If I hadn't learned resistance from the Madonna Vampira, I'd be snared like a housefly in a tank of boiling tar. Your hair is extremely beautiful. And just as heaven is lovely at night with all its stars, lovelier still is the dark blue sea in which they are reflected, for it contains all their beauty and adds another of its own.
Oh!
Ulupi is very angry. She stands with flashing eyes, swelling with rage.
Well, I guess I put my foot in it again.
Then, suddenly, she stoops and gathers up her hair and comes to him and flings it round him like a noose and whispers in his ear with lips that caress as they move.
It's hot and dusty, and I am cool and fragrant as the nectar of that moon in whose light I dance. Come, lay down with me upon my bed of ferns and forest moss.
And there comes from her hair a strange wind, like a cloud of the sweat of a thousand scents that lure his soul to listen and dream in the lulling murmur of her mouth.
I give up. You win.
And as he loses himself in the net of her hair, and as they slowly sink to the forest bed, caressing one another, he knows that he'll never again see Inverness, or look out across the valleys and golden hills that roll up and down and away, far off into the distance.
You begin to see that your upagurus, as opposed to a satguru is the pure light. An upaguru is anybody or anything along the way that takes you one step further, the next message. Birds, dogs, children, accidents, boredom, people you meet all the time, your enemies, they are all your upagurus, because anything that you are perceiving in this plane is the result of an attachment on your part. You've got to remember the basic rule I gave you last time. Desire creates the universe. Your desires create your universe, so that everything you see or know as called your universe is merely a reflection of your uncooked seeds of desire. Because who you are is it all. You wouldn't be seeing anything if you were who you are. You're only seeing something because you forgot. You're it already. It's like looking at your own eyes, looking at your own eyes, looking at your own eyes.
Tune in at this same time tomorrow when you'll hear...
I just want to know whose head this is. I'm looking for a person by the name of Sir Henry Jowls, as well as the land of the Lotus Jukebox, and I want to know.
Fool! You'll never see that Lotus land.
Oh, boy.
And she looks at him with a jeering laugh. The Fourth Tower is produced by ZBS Media.